I gotta hit record. I gotta hit record because I need video of Liam. So you gotta do that again, Liam, so I can get video.
Okay, I just a disclaimer, been sick and I've been doing like full body splits, so the pump is kind of weak right now. It's amazing.
Hold up.
This is what Daniel would do. Daniel would say, "Oh Jesus, look at Vice. There it is. There's a man." So look at this guy. The Hulk of Brooklyn. But so Daniel would come up to me and go, "Wow, you look great. Your arms are bigger than mine. Show me your arm." And I'd be like, "Really? And I feel great." And then he'd go, "Actually, no, it's not bigger." And then he'd do this. And I'd be like, "Jesus Christ, he just blew me out of the room."
No, actually, for the record, I always actually felt your arms were always bigger. I was just trying to make myself.
No, this was a total mind game, and you won every time. Thank you. Thank you for doing that, Daniel.
I'm glad
you remembered our ritual.
Do you remember the time on Skylines when I was doing the scene, you know, when I got hurt, and then your buddy, I forgot his name, comes up to me and he goes, "I'll pump you up," and him and I are pumping. Do you remember that?
Yes, I have that on. It's on Instagram. Okay. It was Thomas Loader, our German VFX supervisor. And he's like a former football player. Like, and so he saw you. You were trying to do like a little bit of like shoulder exercise.
Like,
and so
you're just
kind of getting a little blood flow, and he grabs your arms, and then you're like, oh yeah, let's get a real pump.
Isn't it
you look great. Yeah, no, I just started recording it on my Instagram because I was like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen. So,
but I saw it somewhere.
It was on Instagram. But on the outtakes is you lying there, you're on green screen. This is for his death, where he's going, and then he started just doing the silliest shit after he died each time. So I had like five different things I could have put in the outtakes there, but we picked
it. So funny, man.
Yeah.
Oh, that gave me a good laugh.
Okay, good.
Yeah, sorry, we're a little unprofessional here, Liam.
Yeah, no, we're completely unprofessional. That's how, in fact, I'm just going to, we do a lot of cold opens like this where we just sort of go in. So I'm just going to bring us right in unless you've got any questions, Daniel.
I got a little bit hot.
Telling me, brother. Oh, man.
Memories of Skylines. And see, I think it was seeing Vice shirtless got us hot. But yeah, Mike, take us in.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this week's Action for Everyone for this here September 25th, 2022. I am, as always, your host, Mike Scott, joined, as always, by the inimitable Vice Victus. Vice, how are you today?
Big meaty men slapping meat. That's what I want. we have a fantastic show for you guys today, and I'm already pumped up. I did my heavy back swings. Oh, it's going to be great. Yes, we're into it.
And feeling a little under the weather, but still here, rocking a sweet ass Iron Maiden shirt, Liam O'Donnell. Liam, how are you today?
Yes, thank you, Mike. I'm doing well. I'm doing better. My voice is a little hoarse, but joined by our inevitable guest today, the great Daniel Bernhardt. My spirits are rising.
Daniel, thank you. You know, we've already thanked you profusely, but just for everybody listening, thank you so much for joining us for this.
My pleasure. It really is my pleasure.
So, we have, you know, like we talked about, we're not very professional, so we're just going to kind of wing this. But part of the reason that you're here is, of course, you have a new movie that dropped on Netflix this weekend. Lou, tell us a little bit about how you got involved with that one.
Very, very, very proud of it. I got to jump back one thing. I did a movie called Nobody with Bob Odenkirk. And it was actually the first time that I trained an actor for a movie role. And it just turned out really, really good. Bob and I became very close friends. He did a great job in the movie. He became an overnight action star. And he trained really hard for a year, like a year and a half. So one of our producers, Brayton Aftergood, called me after and he said, "Hey, Daniel, what are you doing?" I said, "Well, I'm available. What do you have?" And he goes, "Well, we're doing this movie, Lou. And we're kind of like doing the same thing. There's this actress, Allison Janney. She's the lead actress, and I would like you to train her and do the fight choreography." And I said, "Absolutely." So I met Allison, trained her for like 4 months. We did Lou. She absolutely killed it. And then, of course, I pitched myself to be in it. Liam can say that I'm the best hustler, right? Right, Liam?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. No. Yeah, and then once he's in, he's like, "I got ideas for more lines." He just keeps going, and exactly. It's always great.
Exactly. Exactly. So, actually, as a matter of fact, I softly pitched myself because our director Anna Forrester was I got the call from Brayton. Brayton hooked me up with the director Anna Forrester, who is a really, really good director. She's a German lady, and I had my call. And I did the interview. We got on the phone and she says, "So how did you see the fights, Daniel?" And I said, "Well, what kind of movie are you making? I mean, I can't tell you how I'm going to do the fights if I don't know what kind of movie you're making." And she kind of looked at me and she goes, "Huh, okay." So she told me the movie she's making. And then based on that, I pitched my ideas and she really loved it. And she looked at a lot of people and she finally chose me, which I'm very lucky. So I started to train Allison. And then there was this massive Shaq fight, huge fight in the movie. I don't know if you guys saw it.
Yeah, it's a great fight.
And the director kind of had in mind like a smaller, really stocky kind of military guy. And I said, "Look, look, Anna, you don't have to hire me, but you got to find somebody in the world of me. You got to find somebody who can do the acting and the fighting. It doesn't have to be me. I have a lot of guys I can bring in." Because Allison is 6 feet tall and you need somebody to protect her. And in the end, she said, "No, I like you. I want to read you." So I had to read for her. So I read and I finally got it. And then I got the part and I did the fight. And I did the fight for Ackerby.
Hell yeah. It's a great scene. It's a great scene. It's great acting. And then of course the action is explosive and it's in camera. Can you just expand about what you said about the height difference in that? If she's 6 feet tall, another actor that's also tall will protect her better in a fight?
It would not. I just felt, no, I would protect her better.
Because yeah, that's what I meant. I mean, what do you mean by that?
So this is what I do. That's my specialty. And I had the pleasure working with you and you saw what I do. And I had a fight scene with our lead guy and I protected him and I helped him. That's why my buddies, Chad Sahelski and David Leitch, they always bring me in movies like, you know, John Wick, Atomic Blonde, Logan. When I have fight scene with actors where, like, for an example, in Atomic Blonde, they gave me the chance to fight opposite Charlize Theron. But they wanted to bring me in because I'm an actor you bring in who can do his own fights. I don't have a stunt double. I do all my own fights. I do all the stunts. But I'm also very safe with the actress.
Right.
And it's very, very important. They don't get hurt. You know, you saw it. We worked together.
Yeah. No, I absolutely. I wanted to just, you know, anytime we're just trying to dial in because, you know, our fan base is obsessed with action here. Our listeners are obsessed with action design. So any of those little kind of details that we can dig into, we want to talk more about it. But I love that scene. I love that fight scene. It was
really and then of course, you know, I was a little selfish because, I mean, I'm a huge Allison Janney fan. I mean, she is unbelievable. What an actress. So, I mean, I was really, really hustling for that part, actually. Once she gave me the opportunity to read, I studied for a week and I really, really worked on it, had a coach and everything. And then this is actually a really funny story. So at the same time, I was training Allison. So we go to 87-Eleven, I'm training Allison. And then I told her, I said, hey, Allison, I'm going to go read. She goes, oh, that's great. I think you'd be awesome. And so what are you going to do? I'm like, oh, I'm going to read tomorrow. She goes, well, do it for me. And I'm like, Oscar winner, I'm not worthy. So she goes, just do it. So I'm outside 87-Eleven, which is, I have my size and I'm just reading with her. And she goes, oh, that's actually really good. Can I give you a suggestion? I'm like, sure. And she takes my side. She goes, watch this. And she reads it ice cold for me. And I'm just like this. I'm like, oh my God, that's unbelievable. I said, how do you do this? She goes, well, it's kind of like, I mean, she's an Oscar winner and she's done like, I think she was on Broadway for way before, like 10 or 15 years, way before she came to Hollywood. She was doing plays on Broadway. And it's kind of like this. I see it kind of like this. It's like when I do a fight scene, when I just do something and I just do it and I go, oh yeah, just do it like this. Bah, 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 bah. And somebody goes, oh, that was amazing. It's the same with her. She is just absolute grandmaster in acting. And then once I got the job, when Anna hired me, and I'm opposite Allison Janney in the shack, and I'm doing my lines, and I'm going like blah 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 blah. It was unbelievable, incredible.
That shack scene is I think absolutely the high point. Like for me, that was the high point of the movie. I thought that scene was so well done. I have to ask, minor spoiler. Was the soup can your idea? Did you come up with the soup can in the choreography?
Yes, sir. Yeah. I gotta give a lot of credit to Anna, to our director. So once I got the job, I'm a little older guy. I'm not like a 20-year-old fight coordinator. So to me, it's really important. All the fights, and Liam knows that we did that on his movie. Everything for me is about story. And I kept Anna involved from the very, very, very beginning of the fight. So I pitched her ideas. She listened to it. And I said, let me do this. I choreographed the fights before I shot the fights, because I shot all the previews. Before I shot the concepts, I created the shack. I lit it. I had wardrobe. It's actually something very, very cool to watch. I hope somebody's going to put it out online. I hope Netflix is going to put it out. The previs and the shack fight are one-to-one. They shot it exactly how I shot the previs. But of course, Anna was really, really involved. So what I would do is, it was during COVID. We were in LA. She was already in Vancouver. So I would do Zoom meetings with her. And I would be like on a Zoom with my computer and put, or with the phone, FaceTime. And my assistant would just put the camera exactly where the shot will be. And I would walk her through the whole fight. I said, I'm going to shoot it like this with that lens. What do you think? Then she would give me suggestions, go a little wider, go a little closer. So Anna was extremely involved in the shack fight from the very beginning. I came up with the idea with the can. She loved it. There were other ideas that I really, really liked. I don't know if you realized it was, what do you call it?
Antlers. Yeah.
Antlers. Yeah. I saw the antlers on the wall. And that was actually my idea, to die with the antlers. But I had like five ideas and they were all even more violent, but then they were a little bit too violent, where Netflix and Anna were like, this may be a little bit too violent.
Right. So that goes back to, what kind of movie are you making? And it's like,
what kind of movie are you making? Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. There were like two ideas that I really, really loved. And the can was actually one of my favorites. And in the end, she chose that. And I really liked it. You know, and you know what we did? Anna is a director who is really, really, really particular. She went like, well, but Daniel, would that be enough to kill somebody? So what I did is I researched it. I found cans, all different kinds of cans. And I found the smaller Campbell cans. You know, they're about this big. And they're thicker. And because they're not as big, they're actually very, once you cut it, it becomes a very sharp, like almost like an X-Acto knife. And that made sense, you know? And otherwise, same thing when the guy shot at Allison, we had to go through all kind of different kind of woods. She wanted to make sure that the wood is not too thin that the bullets would go through. So we had to actually research. She was very, very particular about that.
You know, I looked up her filmography, you know, after I saw the movie, and it was quite interesting. Obviously, she worked with Roland Emmerich for a number of years.
Yes.
But she started in as a DP for like miniatures and VFX units on Independence Day, Godzilla, Pitch Black. And then she becomes a second unit director, second unit DP on like Day After Tomorrow. And then eventually she becomes his main DP on Anonymous, White House Down, and then moves on to directing.
Yeah.
So I always love it when I see that sort of trajectory, you know, that someone, like you're saying, she's going to be very particular and meticulous because she started kind of on the outside and making like her tiny little unit perfect for some of the best movies ever made. And then it kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah. No, she was absolutely fantastic. I mean, I have to say, I was very lucky she chose me. I'm very lucky I worked with her, and I hope I can work with her again. She was just really, she was like a dream. It was the same like with you. I mean, when you and I worked together, it was just amazing. But it's
true. No, we did have a great time. We had a great time,
but also like I always believe I love to have a great time, but the work for me is very important too. So when we did Skylines, I was very lucky Liam chose me to play the character. And I mean, we did some good stuff, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it was actually some funny stuff because, you know, the beginning of Skylines was quite a lot of turmoil that we don't have to get into, but you were kind of like questioning me. I remember after it was like, did you want me or did someone else want me? And I was like, you think someone who wrote that character wouldn't look at your picture and be like, that's the perfect, you know, Colonel Owens ever? I was like, of course it was me. Like, I wanted you from the very beginning. You were actually the first person aside from Lindsay cast in the movie. I just don't think, I'm not sure if you knew that.
I didn't know. I didn't know.
We had a big board and it was Lindsay. And then it was like, and you, because of, you know, your agent, Mike Stout, I'm knowing his whole list. I was like, oh, that's the guy.
You know, that makes me actually really happy because it's always still very nice, you know, in our world as actors. I don't call myself just an actor. I call myself an action actor. And it was Chad Stahelski who actually said that. He said, you're not an actor. You're an action actor.
Okay. That's a great transition point because let's bring it all the way back now to the beginning of your career and this, you know, evolving relationship with Chad and all of these guys. Because Chad's actually in Bloodsport 2 with you, right?
Yes, sir.
So I just watched that for the first time this week, which is not available anywhere except YouTube. I'm not sure if it's legal. I don't support piracy, but it was good to see it. And I had never seen it before. And I was shocked at how great the fights were on this movie. You know, it holds up, and especially on some recent tournament fighting movies, like you go back and you see these classics and it's like, it's wall-to-wall action. It's wall-to-wall fights. And I mean, knowing you that you didn't really have this extensive martial arts background, you really sell it in that film.
Well, actually I have to correct you there.
Okay.
I actually have an extensive martial arts background. So I started martial arts. That's actually one of the reasons why I got the job. So okay. You may not know this.
I thought you said that you started as without it, and then you kind of were like, oh, this is the way to go. I'm going to get into this.
No,
oh, okay.
No. That was about the acting.
Okay. Interesting.
No worries. It's actually quite interesting. So what happened was I started martial arts when I was 15. I was a soccer player, wanted to be a professional soccer player, wasn't really good, but didn't know. I thought I was really good, but I wasn't. So both of my brothers actually went on to almost become pros, but I kind of, it was just not my thing. I was a little bit too tall, a little bit too skinny. So when I was 15 years old, I met a guy in Switzerland who was a Kung Fu guy and kind of JKD guy. And he goes, hey, you want to learn martial arts? And it was really not popular at the time. It was like, I was a huge Bruce Lee fan, watched all Enter the Dragon and all the movies, you know, he did. And so my buddy showed me some martial arts stuff. And I go, oh my God, this is amazing. He shows me something and I go, wow, wow, wow. And I do it. And he goes, oh, wow. And I just realized that I had an absolute natural ability to learn martial arts. So I think within a year, I was better than the guy who started to teach me. And I just fell in love with martial arts. So from 15 to 20, I did 5 years in Switzerland. Then I started to travel the world. I got into the fashion business. So I had this incredible opportunity to travel around the world. And wherever I went to a martial arts school. So I was training in Paris. I was training in London, in Milan, in Tokyo, in New York, in Miami. And then cut 8 years later, I was about 25. I did a commercial in New York. I was still a model for Gianni Versace with Bruce Weber, who's a very famous photographer. So another buddy of mine goes, hey, listen, there's a casting. Bruce Weber is doing a casting for Versace and Jean-Claude Van Damme is the star. And I was like, oh my God, I'm a huge Van Damme fan. It was around the time when Bloodsport came out and Kickboxer. So I did the casting. I got the job, show up in New York at the loft of Bruce Weber. We're ready to shoot, bunch of models. Van Damme shows up. Nicest guy you can imagine. He goes, hey guys, how are you? You know, and he goes, hey, listen, we're doing this fight scene. Who can fight? Who does martial arts? I go, me. He goes, okay, show me. And I just go like this, wang, 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 do a couple of kicks, do a spinning hook kick. And he goes, I like you. I'll take you last. So all the other guys just got punched around a little bit, had to fall down. And he did a little fight scene with me. So that was the first time that I was actually on camera doing a fight scene. And something just clicked in my head. I went like, that's what I have to do. That's what I want to do in life. It was the combination of performing and the martial arts. And it just came so natural to me. They were like, well, can you take a reaction? Well, how? Well, if you go like this, I just went like this. And they go, well, that was perfect. It just came very natural to me. So cut forward, I was still in New York, living in New York. I was living between New York and Miami. And I just caught myself. I went to the gym. A buddy of mine had a little video camera. It was still with tape. And he goes, let's do a videotape. So I'm in the gym, hitting the bag. I'm running on the beach. I'm doing the splits on the beach, all of that stuff. And I've never done filmmaking. I've never cut a video. I've never shot anything like this. I had a nunchuck. I'm doing the nunchuck on the beach. And I got to find this video. It's hysterical. And then I'm doing a little fight scene with my buddy. And we're doing like this. We've never done fights. We're going like, how about this? You punch him, bah, bah, and boom, I punch him in the head. And he goes, oh, and I'm laughing. And I'm going like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And we kept that all in the video. And it was about a 4.5 minute video. And I sent it out to LA. Somebody knew somebody, a friend of a friend of a friend. And Mark DeSalle saw my video. You know Mark DeSalle, the guy who did the original Bloodsport.
Kickboxer, Bloodsport. Yep.
Perfect Weapon. So I get a call. At that time, I was back in Paris. I get a call from Mark DeSalle. Hey, Daniel, I saw your reel. We want you to star in Bloodsport 2. And I'm like, very funny. And I hang up the phone. I thought it was a joke. He calls back. He goes, no, we're serious. So at the time, I had a job somewhere in Florida. I had a job in Mexico, a modeling job. Then I flew through LA, met him, and he offered me a 5-picture deal to do Bloodsport 2 and move on. Long story short, it never worked out with him. He lost the rights. Somebody else came in. 1995, I finally did Bloodsport 2. And that was my first performance, as an actor.
I'm still hung up on the fact that you doing nunchucks on the beach is like how we all have done nunchucks on the beach, but like you're like what we imagine we look like. So it's actually not that funny. Like all of us would be like the most hilarious thing ever, but Daniel doing it actually, it gets in Bloodsport too. That's the difference between you and the normal action fan.
You know what's so funny, Liam? Nunchucks were always my favorite weapon because of Bruce Lee. I was never allowed to do it in any movie.
We got to change it. We got to change that.
Well, I did it in one.
Okay.
I did it in one now. I did it in Barry.
Oh, That's right. I did see that.
It was always forbidden. Everybody said, no, if you do nunchucks, it changes the rating. It goes to an R rating. I was like, well, come on, nunchucks.
That's right. You're great. And then Barry.
So I did it in Barry. They let me do it.
That's because I got to imagine, you know, having now seen, I mean, I have long been on record that your episode of Barry, I think, is one of the greatest episodes of any television series ever.
Thank you.
But also, you know, having now watched season 3, like Hader legit loves action. Like he's a legit action guy.
Bill Hader, I got to tell you, I give all the credit for Barry, the TV show, the episode I did, it was called Ronnie and Lily, I think. I give it all to him. He had such a clear vision. He wrote it, directed, produced it, starred in it, directed it. I mean, it was insane. And he would be like off camera and he would come in. All right, Dan, here's what I want you to do. I don't know if you remember the scene where
pretty
they
good, first, hater.
They shoot me. I'm like a stoner. And actually, to be honest, that is a really funny story to how I got that. If you want to tell me that story, it's hysterical. Hysterical.
Yeah.
So I get a call from the stunt coordinator, Wade Allen. He goes, hey, Daniel, I got this gig. You are absolutely wrong for the job. 100% wrong. We've looked at everybody. The director wants a guy who's short, stocky, losing his hair, kind of over the hill, Taekwondo champion. I'm like, well, that's not me. But I can't find anybody. You're the last guy. And I'm like, okay, I'll come in. He goes, let me give you a tip. Bill is very keen on the acting. Do nothing. And I'm like, I understand. I get it. I know what that means. So I go in, meet Bill Hader. He comes up to me and goes, hey, Daniel, man, big fan. I love your work. And I'm like, I love your work. I'm Dan. You're Bill Hader. I love your work. He goes, all right, I want you to read for me. Look, you're really wrong for the job, but I still want to try it. So, and he goes, I give you one hint. Do nothing. I'm like, okay, I get it. So we do the scene, and it wasn't a lot of dialogue, but there was dialogue. And I have to play the stoner. So I just show up and just go like this. We do the scene, and he goes, that was good. Can you do a little bit less? I go, okay. We did it three times, and after the third time, he looks at me, and he goes, all right, we'll let you know. Do me a favor. Please don't shave. And I walked out of it, and I go, I got it. Because they couldn't find anybody. What he wanted doesn't exist. And there's a very funny video on YouTube where he talks about it. You got to look it up. It's hysterical. He is on some kind of a talk show, and he talks about how this whole thing happened. And he goes, well, then this guy comes in, Daniel Bernhardt. He looks like John Hamm. And then the casting director said, oh, we should have him in the read with everybody. I really like it. It's hysterical. He's doing this whole thing like I just did. He's doing it about me. It's really, really funny. And I got the job. And then our fight stunt coordinator had a very clean idea what he wanted. And they wanted a one. So the whole thing, no cuts. That was all the stunt coordinators and Bill Hader's idea, how they did it. I just showed up and helped a little bit with the choreography and just performed. And it was amazing. Got nominated for like, what, 6 Emmys? Crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, no, it's and it's such a perfect balance, especially for people like me who have, you know, literally followed your career since Bloodsport 2. I've been a fan for many years. To see you show up and be like, oh fuck, it's Daniel Bernhardt, but then to have you play that character worked so well, because it's like I'm expecting Daniel Bernhardt and I'm getting Daniel Burnout instead. And it's amazing. And the wheeze when you run into him in the grocery store again or the drugstore, the wheeze. I'm not exaggerating. I think that is one of the most perfect episodes of television that has ever been made.
That's all Bill Hader. I mean, he was so particular about the sound he wanted me to make. And then I had to go in for ADR. He worked on it with me again. And I mean, I got to give him all the credit. That guy is something else, I tell you. His vision. Oh. And then he would be like off camera. You remember the thing with the mask? He'd be like off camera. He goes, all right, Daniel, here's what I want you to do. Blah, 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 blah. He runs off camera, puts it back on, and he goes, all right. And he gives me the lines. I mean, I was like, how can you do that? Give the perfect performance and direct the whole thing. I was just so impressed.
Unreal. Unreal. Speaking of directing, I actually did want to ask you about your short that you directed, Fetch. How did that come about? Because that's you and you, I mean, it stars Leech. You directed it.
Chad is my second unit director.
Yep. So I mean, this is you know, again, back.
That's funny, isn't it?
Yeah, like Liam said, you know, back to the start where you guys have kind of all been together for 25 years at this point, you know.
Yeah, I want to jump back real quick to what Liam was saying earlier about Chad Cyhalski and David Leitch. I've worked with these guys. So I brought in Chad. Chad Cyhalski did in Bloodsport 2, he choreographed my best fight scene. Philip Tan was the fight coordinator and stunt coordinator, but Chad did my fight with me and him. And he did such, that was my favorite fight in the whole movie. And he did such an amazing job that we gave him fight coordinating and stunt coordinating for Bloodsport 3. So at that time, that was like the mid-90s. I did like four movies together. We did Bloodsport 2, 3. We did a movie called Perfect Target, which was actually a pretty good movie. It was an HBO world premiere. And we did a movie called True Vengeance. And True Vengeance was an homage to Hard Boiled. I don't know if you know that. Because Chad was a huge, huge John Woo fan. So we did we had our little version of Hard Boiled. It was called True Vengeance, which, by the way, did you ever see that, Liam?
No, Mike has seen all of these, though. So that's
I'm telling you, you can watch it on YouTube.
Yeah, it's rock solid, and it is absolutely an homage to Hard Boiled.
It was directed by David Worth, who was an amazing DP and a great director. And still, I talked to David today. He's teaching now at UCLA, I believe. When you watch it, you'd be really, really surprised on the action. It was a very small movie, probably $1 million, $1.5 million budget. But what we did with the action was insane. Of course, it's a little bit 90s. It's a little bit dated now. But still, I mean, I'm flying through the air with two guns, rolling on the ground, jumping on the wagon, going backwards, firing like this.
I got to see that.
It's really hysterical. And I've been actually thinking about it. I want to do a remake.
Yes, true. A legacy sequel.
Is that what it's called?
Well, you do like the Maverick thing. Like you come back, it's a remake, but it's also a sequel.
I love it.
Look the same too, so it's all good.
I love it. So we've been working together, but then Chad, actually at the time it was Chad Cyhalski and Brad Martin. Brad went off to work with George Clooney. He did The Peacemaker. Then Chad went off to do Matrix with Keanu. So then I was a little bit left by myself. I continued doing my lower budget movies, which was not as much as fun without them. But then the first Matrix came out and I was just blown away. I was just like, oh my God. And then there was an opportunity to work on Matrix Reloaded. And I never forget, Chad called me and he goes, Daniel, call your agent. They're looking for agents for Matrix 2. And I was like, oh my God. So I thought like, I'm going in and I thought like, it's just gonna be me. There's like hundreds of people. I'm like, wow. It's like, everybody's gone. They looked at everybody in town who was at least, you had to be 6 feet tall. You had to have some kind of a background, dancer, martial arts, gymnast, and have to have a certain look. But every stunt guy I knew, every dancer I knew, every actor I knew was there. And I was very lucky and I got it, you know?
The upgrade. You're the upgrade.
Yeah. It's him, the anomaly. Yes, he's still only human.
I still know it.
There's so many ways we can go, but we have limited time. So I want to say I was a big fan of yours. Mortal Kombat Conquest.
I love it.
You know, that guy, for kids like me, you know, grew up in the hood, like we have, like, we don't have like the art house cinemas, that we don't have like this broad range of access to different kinds of movies. So, like, in a way, like stuff like that, even though it sounds strange, like, because where you're from, it's like opening it, like it's like me seeing Bruce Lee, or it's like seeing, like, you know,
really,
yeah, because like the guys from your era, like Don Wilson, Oliver Grenier, like it's a whole new world, like. Literally international cinema, just like muscles from Brussels or whoever, like you're a part of that too. So I really appreciate that, you know. So you see you in the video game, do Kung Fu show. It was like, it's all like, it all came together. So thanks for that. But one thing
that was a good show.
Yeah, man, it was dope. It was like, actually had like the story made sense because the games are nonsense. Anyway, what's interesting is that you have that So recently we did an episode on our podcast where we were trying to figure out the future of action cinema. We were trying to figure out who are the next big stars who we think would be like the A-list like action heroes, like the way what Tom Cruise is now or has been in the past. Who's next? Guys like Michael B. Jordan and so forth. We kind of had it.
But
something, yeah. But something I didn't, well, and then somewhere along the way, we kind of considered, well, who then would be the next elder league of, like, you know, the Charles Bronsons or like the elder statesmans of action.
Liam Neeson, exactly.
But one thing I'm realizing throughout these episodes, our study of film, is that you and your crew, David, Chad, like, you have become the institution of what the future of action cinema is. Aww. Like, you know, it's almost like your master JoJo is now this like a kind of empire. And, you know, people, we are seeing this in stuff like Barry and stuff and that Tony Blonde. Like, and that's what I wanted to ask you, like, I don't think we have ever had anything quite like this, where it's like the name 8711 or the names Chad or Bernhardt, like that's selling the movies just as much as the actors are, in a way. Like when people like even this one with and especially with both Lou and Nobody, now you have this whole new niche, I could say, like, where it's almost like you specialize in turning old comedic actors, to be crude, into action badass superstars. Yeah. And no one else can do this like you've proven. So I just wanted to, like, it's just interesting, like, to talk about, like, was not if that was a plan, but do you see yourselves as this kind of like a reigning cartel of the action cinema?
You know, it's interesting what you're saying, because the reason why I did the whole thing with Bob is because my mentor is Chad Sahelski and David Leitch. And Chad and I train every day. I go to 8711 every morning at 8 o'clock. We do our jujitsu, we do our fighting, and we talk about movies. And he's a very close friend of mine. So Chad always taught me, teach and you'll be better at what you do. So I took his advice. And then the whole thing with Bob came along. And I got a call from David Leitch's wife, Kelly McCormick. And she said, hey, Daniel, we're doing this movie Nobody. You're going to be in it anyway. Would you be interested in training Bob? And I said, you know what? I'm a big fan. I would love to do that. And I took the challenge, what Chad told me, to teach. And it was one of the best things I've ever done. I enjoy so much teaching. I love it. I love teaching. It makes me better. It makes me better as a performer. It makes me better as a fight coordinator. It makes me better as an actor. It makes me better at everything. So when I, like, it started all with Bob. So when I train Bob, I'm watching him, how he does his fighting and how he does his acting in the fighting. And that's, to me, Chad always taught me that. What do you remember about Bruce Lee? You don't remember the spinning kick, the side kick. Maybe you do, but what you remember is the pose. And when he goes like this, that's what you remember. So it's the moments in between the fighting. And that's what's the most important thing for me. Same happened in Lou. When we were doing the fight scene, the moves are good. The moves are great. But it doesn't really matter if it's like this, this, and this, or if it's like this, this, and that. It doesn't matter. It matters the moments in between. And also when Liam and I worked together, remember in our fight scene, it was all about the moments. And you were very keen about that too. It's about the acting in the fighting. That's very important.
Yeah, I think that's actually maybe one of the things that kind of singles you guys out is that, because as you say, you're an action actor. And, you know, we talked to the great Scott Adkins, you know.
I love Scott. Scott is
I know. Yeah, and, you know, he's kind of been... he's done something similar. What I mean to say is, in a similar way that you're kind of affecting the overall atmosphere of action, like not just on camera, he's doing something similar with his Art of Action series, where he talks to you.
He's been on his show.
Exactly. Yeah. Like he's kind of, he's coming like the action film journalist, like probably better than a lot of regular film journalists, because he knows what you guys, the process you guys do and how it relates. But so yeah, it's like, Do you so back to this, do you see this like I don't know, the Bernhardt school of action acting? Like do you want to try to do more of this? Like, do you want to expand this reach you have? Because, like, I gotta tell you, it's fucking working, man. It's like what you're pulling off is, like, I don't think we've seen this before.
You know, I've always lived by, I'm a little bit like a bird. I've always lived by the philosophy of, when a door opens, I take it. So that just happened. Like, let's say Liam calls me tomorrow and he says, hey, Daniel, I got a great role. I want you to play the third lead in my next movie. I'll take it. it doesn't really matter to me what I do. As a fight coordinator, you can hire me as a stuntman. You can hire me to teach somebody. It doesn't really matter because I love what I do. And how I just did the movie called Extraction 2. And I was hired and I was hired to play a role.
Well, hold on. Because we just saw the trailer and the stuff just got announced yesterday and it looks fucking fantastic. So I wanted you to give us the full Extraction 2 thing. But I do just want to add, Daniel, one of the things I do really love about you is that every time I talk to you, you're coming off of some job and it doesn't matter how little or small. Like I remember during ADR, you were like, yeah, I just did some extra second unit stuff for Dune. That was like, you know, the CG fight that they added at the end. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, you're just, a lot of people are, you know, have different, attitudes about what type of work you should and shouldn't do. And you're the one who's just like, work begets work. I love to work and I'll do any job, no matter how big or no small. And I always find that to be incredibly inspiring.
I love to work. Like you just said, the right word. I always believe work creates work. And I give you an example. I got a call from Garrett Warren and he said, hey, Daniel, we're doing Logan. And would you be interested in playing the Hugh Jackman part in the concepts, in the previses? So I played his part. I did all the concepts. So I'm being Wolverine. I'm slicing. It was amazing. I worked on it for like 2 months doing all the previses. And then the director saw me and he liked what I did and he gave me a part in Logan. So there you go. You know, it's like work creates work. And I just love to work. I mean, you know, something like I just did a little job in a little Netflix TV show in Albuquerque and a buddy of mine called me and I did it. It's just, I just love to work, you know?
So, okay. Give us Extraction 2 to hype everybody up because you told me a little bit about it. It sounds very exciting.
It's an amazing movie. Sam Hargrave directed it. It's going to be absolute massive. I'm a huge Chris Hemsworth fan. He is just something else, that guy. When I met him, I went like, damn, that's a star. Holy crap. And that's like, and I'm pretty tall. I'm like 6'3". He's taller than me. Oh, shit. He's like 6'4", maybe. Massive, big guy. Great voice. Yes, this really deep voice. Beautiful man. Great actor. I think that movie is going to be out of control. I'm playing a really, really nice part in it. I'm playing Constantine. And also, I had two jobs on the movie. So not just one, I had two jobs. I played my part. And then I was in charge of training all the actors except Chris. Chris had his own team. I trained all the other actors. They've never done martial arts. And I had about five. I trained them for about 6 months altogether. And they absolutely killed it. And there was a beautiful lady in there called Golshifteh Faharani, who's playing opposite Chris, and she was just unbelievable. What she pulled off, how hard she trained. She would call me like every day, I want to train harder, I want to train longer. And we would do like 3-hour sessions. And I said, listen, we gotta, you know, don't go too much. I don't want you to get hurt. And it was just, I love it. And like we said earlier, you can call me. So Liam, you know, if you're got something going on and you know you can hire me as an actor and you can hire me as a stuntman, you can hire me as a teacher.
Oh, you're always on the list. You're always on the top of my list of my short list.
Thank you.
But that sounds so exciting. And I really do love that they just went with two in the title. I'm glad it wasn't like Extraction something else. Rake Lives. It's just Extraction 2. That's great. I'm looking forward to it.
We gotta just bask in the glory for a second about, you know, again, you're saying all this stuff, you have all this stuff, this huge culture defining stuff has your fingerprints on it as well. It's nice, you know, it's amazing thing to see.
Daniel, did you and Chris go to a bar at any point together? Did the two of those Chads like walk into a room and have the energy just like shift around you guys? Cause I've walked into bars with you. I remember the first dinner we had in Vilnius in with Lindsay and Lindsay Morgan. Remember she had like a leopard print outfit on. And so I'm walking down Vilnius with Lindsay in a leopard print outfit and you, 6'3" God. And everyone's just turning and staring at us like, what the fuck is going on? And
they're not, you know, they're from
Eastern
out of town.
European town. Yeah.
They're from out.
That's
amazing. But we had such, yeah, so we're back. Who somebody froze. It wasn't me, right?
It was you, yeah.
Oh, it was me?
Yes. Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. So the answer to answer the question of the two Chads in when you were filming, would people just stop and be like, what the fuck's going on here? Why is there so much handsome around?
You know what? If I would say yes to that, that'd be really strange, wouldn't it? Oh yeah, I noticed everybody looking at us. Oh my God, he is looking at us. Well, who is looking at us? No. Probably not.
Probably not. I love it.
But just to go back to Vilnius, we had such a great time. That was actually one of my favorite shooting experiences. It was just amazing. You know,
well, you had, you know, like we'd say Jean and Cha and Fong there along with you guys, and you guys, the, you know, real deal action have such a great rapport together, and they have such a great rapport with the city of Vilnius. Let's just say that.
I'm really, really close with Jean, Fong and Cha. Now get a word of that. Cha, Chan and Fong. It's like everybody like, ah. They did such a great job. And actually the fight scene we did with Cha is actually one of my favorite fight scenes because,
you know, incredible.
They pitched me the idea and go, hey, Daniel, how do you feel about Wing Chun? How do you feel about trapping? And I'm like, well, I've done it, but I haven't done it in a long time. I did it with Chad in Bloodsport 2 and they were just kind of testing me. And he goes, how about this? Bah, 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 bah. And they're like, oh, you're fast. I'm like, love to do it. And Cha is like, this guy is insane. He is, he's like an eighth degree black belt Taekwondo champion. And I mean, way above me and so fast, so fast. So now I'm going to ask you a question, Liam.
So athletic too. I mean,
so athletic. Yeah. But now I'm going to ask you a question, Liam. You're on the spot now.
Okay.
The fight scene, I do a sidekick. Do you remember?
Yes.
Did you speed it up a little bit?
Oh, you know, it's like little tweaks here and there, but not
because really. I went like, damn, I'm fast.
Yeah, there was, you know, when you do the previs and second unit like Cha and they kind of sent their edit of what the fight was. And then Barrett, Heathcote and I, we looked at that footage and we kind of, you know, I think the original cut, I remember you and I talked about this. It was, I'd say probably farther into the Hong Kong style editing. And we're like, well, that's not really going to match the rest of the movie. So we kind of like adjusted some of the edit points. But I don't remember us having to really speed anything up. It was also just figuring out the right places to intercut with the other story. Because if you remember in the script, the fight was like, he chokes him from behind. Cha runs up the wall, breaks the lock, and then runs out of the room. So there was no space for like this real huge fight. Like story-wise, there wasn't like, oh, we can just stay in here forever. But it ended up becoming great for me to have all that footage because I was getting pinched on the VFX side on the other story of them getting into the ship. I had no shots to tell that story. So by intercutting that fight, you know, with this great production value, this great martial arts with this other story of getting this big creature inside of a ship, I was able to kind of paper over what I couldn't afford to do. So it ends up being my favorite part of the whole movie. Cause it's like, you've got these two things contrasting and the tension building and then it kind of all, you know, boils over, but yeah, no, that was I really don't think we did a ton of speed ramps in general.
Only one. It was only the sidekick because I saw the sidekick and I go, fuck, that was so clean and so fast. I mean, I'm pretty fast, but I'm a bigger guy, but I'm pretty fast. But that looked like, I was like, I use it for my reel. Hey, nothing wrong with it.
But even Cha's kick up on the bed looks fake. Like it's not speed ramped. He's just that fast. He is quite,
so fast. I really, really like the fight. You guys did an amazing job how you cut it. And I'm very proud of it. And I used actually two moments in my reel.
Oh, great.
I like it.
Glad to hear that.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Liam doesn't need the ego boost. Okay.
But I do, Mike. It's so obvious. I do.
I'm going to actually give you an ego boost too. So, Daniel, this is actually how Liam and I kind of became friends, is when Skylines came out, because I am such a big fan of yours. I was like, I loved Beyond Skyline and I had faith, but I'm like, Liam better fucking hook Daniel Bernhard up in this movie. And he did. And that was literally when I started reaching out to Liam and being like, yeah, you took care of my boy on this one. And that's how we ended up, you know, on this podcast. Because yeah, he hooked you up in that movie. You look terrific. And you obviously you brought it on your end too, because my favorite part of that movie is the fight with you and Cha, because I'm also a big Real Deal fan. I had seen Plan B years ago, so I'm a big fan of those guys, and it just all around really terrific work on that movie. And I will deny that I ever said any of this.
No, but it really, really was. And at the very end, I was like, "Do you remember that, Liam? Do you remember the very end?" I was like, "Oh, so I'm really dying. Are you sure? You sure there's not gonna be me coming, you know, I can come back?" And he was like, "No, you're dead." I'm like,
like, everybody comes back in these, but you are space dust. So let me look, I'm still like, they're still trying to make a part four, so I'll try to figure out some place to put you if you're available, of course.
Is there a chance that I may have a blonde brother?
Yes.
Is there a chance that I may put, I was very, because I really liked how you made me look good in that movie. I got to give you a lot of credit for that.
You looked so good in that movie that I copied your look afterwards. I was like, this guy's hair looks so good. I started getting my hair done the way Daniel does, because I was like, wow, that just looks so fresh.
Is this weird?
Yeah.
Is this weird?
You guys recap that one, Mike. That was, oh man.
Liam and I would go to the gym together and we just go absolutely crazy. And you know what's funny? Chan keeps telling me, he goes, "Daniel, you were so fit in that movie." And I was like, "Really?" And he goes, "Yeah, you were fucking huge." And
yeah, you were bulky. You had a lot of bulk muscle on that. Yeah.
But you know what I did? I actually increased my meals because I wanted, for the character, I just wanted to get bigger. I was probably, and also the European food. And I remember I ate a lot of, do you remember quark? What quark is?
No.
Do you
have that? I don't think I have it.
It's a byproduct. It's after yogurt. It's a little thicker than yogurt. I don't eat that anymore now because I stopped. But at the time, I ate a lot of protein, and I think I got a little bit bigger. And then, of course, with Thomas, we were like,
"Yes." So Daniel comes up to me at the gym, and he's like, "Well, did you want to work out together today?" And it was like, I can't say no. But he does insane workouts where he's just like, "So we're gonna do 100 reps of the lat pull down right now," cool. And I'm like, "What?" I'm just like a bro split guy at this point who does, you know, like, you know, 8 to 12, whatever, 4 moves on. And we sat there and did 100 reps, and he's like pulling my back down as I go through it. And I was like, there's no escape. I have to, the only way out is through. I can't die with Daniel Bernhard right now, but he did kill me.
Oh, actually, wait, this might be a weird question. Speaking of working out. So like we all said, you know, we're all, you know, in our mature silver years. And like I mentioned before, you know, your most recent projects, you've had these older actors, you've gotten them to a really fantastic level of fitness, or at least for the purposes of the film. Is there any specific concerns or any like specific suggestions, tips or mode that you would recommend, or how do you get older people? Well, compared to the crew that used to fighting with, like the young guys, the goons, are there any particular precautions that you take, especially for older personnel when training?
I don't think it has anything to do with age, young or old. I've I'm eating the same way I ate when I was 20. Mm. I've always done high protein, good fats, good carbs. I've always eaten the same way my whole life, because I got really like I was a huge Arnold Schwarzenegger, Van Damme, Sylvester Stallone fan, you know, grew up with Rocky, Terminator, Kickboxer, Bloodsport, Bruce Lee. I mean, look at those guys.
Yeah.
I was never a bodybuilder. That was never my thing, but I've lived my life like a bodybuilder. I would do, like, I'm always basically on a diet, but I don't call it a diet anymore. I call it a lifestyle. So I eat my vegetables. I eat high protein. I don't eat meat anymore, but I do fish. I eat my soy. I don't do actually dairy anymore. So I do my oatmeals and oat milk, and I just eat healthy. And like Liam was saying earlier, depending on the role, like when he offered me this part, he kind of gave me an idea what he wanted me to look like. And then I was like, oh, that's his vision for the character. And I just started to bulk up and just got a little bigger. And all I do is I just increase maybe one or two meals a day, and I just lift a little heavier. But then what we did is, what I like to do is, I don't just like to work out. I need to change it up every day. Like sometimes I never have a plan. I go, today I feel like, let's do shoulders. And I say, hey, Liam, how about let's do 100 reps? And you just change it up and you switch it up. And it's just fun, you know?
Yeah. Well, you said like on a travel day, if you can't get to the gym, you'll just do like 300 air squats in your room.
That's what I do. So like anybody, and I challenge anybody on this, and this may be interesting for your podcast. So like I did that with Bob. So Bob is super, super fit. So I would train him for about an hour and a half, 2 hours, martial arts, stretching, training, cardio, everything. And always at the end, we do what's called 100s. We do 100 push-ups, 100 sit-ups, and 100 squats. And it takes exactly 25 minutes. And you can do that anywhere. If somebody tells me, oh, I don't have time to work out, I can't go to the gym. You need a couple of square feet in your hotel room. You do 25 squats. You go down on the ground. You do 25 push-ups. You go on your back. You do 25 sit-ups, and you do it 4 times. And I tell you, that's a 25-minute workout, and you're huffing and puffing. You know?
Yeah. It's just that it's... Yeah, no excuses, right? Yeah, no, just because I'm thinking, like, you know, seeing my action hero as a kid growing up now, and still looking as good as he ever did, moving as good as he ever did. You know, it's just like, well, long story short, I was in the army for a while, and I had some pretty bad injuries in my knee and stuff. When I came back, you know, weight loss and, you know, all the stuff that goes with coming back to the world. So in one regard, it's kind of fascinating to me as a fan, like, you know, seeing, you know, having that childhood, you know, the guy from Mortal Kombat, but now he's like, now we have this crop of older heroes, and it's like, it's just inspiration again, really. It's like, oh wait, no, I don't have to fade into the dust. I can like get active again. And I've been successful in that part.
Good call. And you know what, just I want to actually jump on that, what you just said. You know, like, to me, let's say I feel, and I'm sure Liam will agree with me on this, if you cast a guy in a role, let's say you would have cast for my character in Skylines. If you would have cast a guy who's 25 years old just because he's hip and he looks maybe younger, it just doesn't make sense for the character. The life experience is not there, you know? They haven't lived. And so I'm very pro, and it's really, like you were saying, it's very popular right now. They're bringing the Bob Odenkirks, they bring Allison Janney, and people are going crazy, you know, about their performance. And of course, in the end, it's also the acting. You know, it's the acting. And just jumping back to Mortal Kombat real quick, I'm a big, big fan. I'm still very close with my buddy, Larry Kazanoff, who's the producer. He's a really close friend of mine. I just saw him the other day. And apparently it's on HBO Max, the whole show, the whole season.
Oh,
he calls me up and he goes, dude, did you know Mortal Kombat is on HBO Max? I'm like, really? He goes, gotta watch it. It's awesome. I haven't watched it yet. I don't really watch my own stuff a lot. But
this is all good to know.
Oh, well, speaking, wait, there's something Mike asked earlier that I wanted to circle back to about your directorial debut, your short, because we filled in the backstory now. Now we're up to it. So talk to us about that.
Yeah, it's a little bit my ADD. When I get so excited, and then I jump on a thing and I move on. So that was about in 2006. I had a really bad injury. I basically tore my whole pec off.
Oh.
It was terrible. It was a bad accident. And I couldn't work for about more than a half a year. because I had the injury and then I thought I can rehab. It didn't work, tore more, then I had to actually have surgery. And so I just thought, hey, I've got to do something. So I came up with the idea to direct. I was like, hey, listen, I have this idea. So I met with Chad and I said, hey, Chad, I got this idea to do a short. And he goes, great. Why don't you use Leach as the lead? He wants to act. He'll pay for half. I'm like, he's in. So David Leach, so I wrote, directed, and produced it. Chad Sahelski and David Leach executive produced it with me. And I just did this little short and it was so much fun. Actually, one of the best times I've ever had. It was just so much. First, I wanted to star myself. And then I was like, absolutely not. No way. And Leach did such a great job in it. And Chad helped me with all the fights. He was my second unit guy. So that project was actually the first project that 8711 did at the time. And they just kind of built 8711. And then weirdly enough, how funny, I kind of thought about, oh, I want to be a director. But then it kind of went like this. Zip. Right. They became the two biggest directors in the world. And then my career as an action actor just kind of went up and I just kept working and working and working, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, it's for people listening, if you want to see it, it is the easiest way to see it is it's available in a compilation called Blood, Sweat, and Terrors that also has a couple of other really, really great action shorts in it. And it's pretty much streaming anywhere you want. But I cannot recommend checking out Fetch enough. I think it's so much fun.
Much fun. I'm still working on we actually had a really, really strong opportunity to turn it into a feature film. So I actually wrote a script for it. Still working on it, and it's still in my back pocket. One day I'll make Fetch into a feature film. It could be a really fun project.
I have one other kind of very narrow question for you, Daniel, because I know we've got you for a limited time. We need to let you get out of here. But you also are sort of one of the few Western actors that's gone over and been involved in a Bollywood movie. You were in Brothers, which is the remake of Warrior. Tell me a little bit about that experience, because I'm
totally forgot about that. It was just it was one of those things where somebody asked me to go and I had nothing else going on. And I went to Mumbai and did this little movie. I really loved the Indian filmmaking, I have to say. They're real filmmakers. We shot everything on film and we shot that movie. I mean, they shoot a movie and like, you have 7 years to finish this film. I mean, they take so much time. They have so much time because it's inexpensive to shoot. It was a fun experience. It was interesting. It was, I had a part in it that I played. I did some fight scenes. I worked with Akshay Kapoor, who is unbelievable. I don't know if you guys know his work. Stunning man. Great actor, same age as me, just a very calm guy. He works, he shows up at 8, he leaves at 5. That's how he lives.
Yeah.
You got to get the shot between those. He's very particular with his times. He's a very good performer. He was just an amazing guy to work with.
Yeah, I was curious because, you know, there's not a ton of crossover between sort of the Western film industry and Indian cinema. There's a few actors
that have crossed. They like to bring people from Hollywood to India to help with the fight choreography, to help with the action. It's a very different way of filmmaking, but very interesting. You know, it's a very they're real filmmakers. They really love making movies. They really do.
Yeah, that's actually one of the things we've tried to do on this show is highlight a lot of Indian cinema, just because I do think it's, you know, I grew up as a big Hong Kong guy in the 80s. And I kind of feel like India is sort of the new Hong Kong. They're doing really interesting stuff and really fun action. And obviously, you know, RRR blew up internationally this year, but all right. Well, Daniel, I know we only had you for an hour. We've kept you a few minutes longer, so
it's all right. If you have another question, it's fine. I mean, it's Sunday. I got nothing to do. So, but just shoot away if you have a question. It's fine. Come on.
This still was basking in glory. So, yeah, he's like, it's like, you're more handsome brother.
Yeah, this is my uncle Daniel. basically modeling myself after this guy. I'm noticing it too. But that is part of, you know, writing in directing. There's a little piece of you in each character. And sometimes the character you think you are is not the character you end up being. Like that's in those movies, you know, you wouldn't be like, yeah, I'm the fascist bad guy. And then you're like, well, I guess I am the fascist bad guy. So, I mean, Daniel, I'm so excited that we finally got you on, and always excited about everything that you're working on. I guess, is there anything that you're, you know, aside from Extraction 2, anything upcoming that you could tease us about, or?
Well, there's actually one thing I wanted to talk about real quick. It's a movie I'm very proud of. It's a smaller movie, but it's a movie that I do no action in. It's called Hell Hath No Fury.
Oh, you don't have to tell us about Hell Hath No Fury.
I was actually just going to interrupt Liam and say, I can't let you go without talking to you about Hell Hath No Fury, because we flipped shit for that movie when we reviewed it on this episode or on this show. We're all diehard Jesse fans. So yeah, tell us about Hell Hath No Fury, because we fucking loved that movie.
I wish you'd have called me at the time.
I did call you at the time, Daniel. Yes, you were busy. We're trying to get you on.
What? I'm so sorry, because I did a lot of publicity for it.
I think you might have been in Extraction 2 time, but yeah, no, anyway.
I was doing a lot of interviews. But
we actually had just started this podcast. We were like on week 3 when that movie came out. So it wasn't, it was kind of in the nascent periods. Whereas now, you know, we're talking to Netflix. We've got 50,000 downloads. Hello. You know, we get our stars delivered on time. So yes, but no, we were super excited about that movie. And we definitely, you know, we thought you were the highlight of the film, and especially from, you know, like you're saying, it wasn't an action actor role. It was an actor role.
It was a very special movie for me. I got a call from, I have two friends who told me, it was Garrett Warren and a buddy of mine who's a writer who called me and said, hey, you got to meet this guy, Jesse Johnson. I think you guys would just hit it off. And I'm like, yeah, I know his work. I think he's great. I'd love to meet him. So we met for coffee. And we just hit it off. And we were just talking about old movies. That's all we did. We just talked about filmmaking and directors and movies and actors. And it was just fantastic. And he said, you know what, Daniel? One day, I think we should work together. Out of the blue, he calls me. He goes, hey, I got this little indie movie. It's low budget. I can't, you know, it was through COVID. Nobody was working. And he says, hey, would you like to do it? And I read the role and I was like, damn. I mean, I was like, wow, I speak German. So, but I speak Swiss German and German. So my German, I have a slight Swiss accent in my German. So I had to work in my German. I used to speak French. I mean, I still do, but not fluent, but I used to be fluent. So, and there was a monologue, a Victor Hugo monologue. And I worked on that. Unfortunately, the whole monologue didn't make the movie. But it was an amazing role for me, just acting, being this charming guy and a guy who was in love with this woman. And it was just an amazing role. It was incredible. It was so much fun to do. And I kind of stretched myself as an actor. And I got a lot of really good reviews on this, like where actually people singled me out. And I was a little bit like, oh, hello. Hello.
Deservedly so, because the performance is quite incredible and dynamic. And I love that it had the flashbacks, you know, before and afterwards with the scars and stuff like that. So it really gave a full portrait of the guy.
Thank you. And Jesse did a really, really good job with this movie. Really good job.
I'm actually friendly with the DP, Jonathan Hall. And it was another one of those that I asked him, how are you possibly making these movies look so good on the budget? And I still don't quite understand, but it is like for a period movie for that budget, it looks pretty authentic through and through. It looks great.
It was all daylight.
Yeah.
Everything outside is daylight. There were no lights. I mean, I don't really remember lights. It was all daylight.
And smoke. Lots of smoke.
A lot of smoke.
Yeah, that's one that we really tried to champion here, because it was, I've long been a big Jesse fan and have been championing his work for years, because I think he's terrific. But I thought he kicked it into a whole different level with Hell Hath No Fury.
I agree. Yeah. And he got a theatrical release. I mean, it was like, wow. It was incredible what he did.
Yeah.
We have it's going to be annual now. A annual war film retrospective at the end of each year, because that's my specialty as a film journalist is war film and intersection. So I was really impressed with your performance in Hell Hath No Fury. Yeah, and my whole goal is to try to kind of, even though it's obvious war film in the setting World War II, Nazis, spies, but there's so many ways to tell these kinds of stories. War isn't just like head to head battles, like all this or the emotional and turmoil around it. So, after we're done speaking to you today, we're going to actually talk a bit about Lou. I don't want you to hear what I'm about to say, but just know that I think that after seeing it, I'll probably have it on this year's list as well. Because again, even though it's not directly about head-to-head conflict, like all this stuff that's come to a head, all this the 20 plus years of global war and terror, and how that affects us here at home. I think Lou was a part of that. And it's just cool to have, once again, your fingerprints kind of touching all these aspects, to make this feeling manifest, because it's been difficult to do. Even for me to speak it sometimes, it's hard to express. So I like that the gritty finesse of your style of action kind of helps that along, helps the rest along. So I really appreciate that. So I definitely look forward to getting to that world.
Yeah, it's actually really interesting what you're saying, because Hell Hath No Fury was very special to me because my parents were German. And so I got the chance, and I was born and raised in Switzerland, so I really had nothing to do with Germany, but I had a chance to play a Nazi, and he was not your typical Nazi. He mm-hmm. was a guy who was in love, and it was a terrible time in the world, and he did what he had to do, but he did a lot of bad things.
Yeah.
And a decision what I made in the end, spoiler alert, but when I get killed, I let her kill me. Think about this. I had this epiphany about just the morning of when we shot the scene. I went to Jesse and I said, "Hey, Jesse, I'm letting her kill me." Because she's the only, I'm in love with her, and she's the only one who can kill me for my sins, what I've done. Yeah. Because the war is over. If I die, I want to die through her hands. Because if you look at it, because I just had this conversation yesterday with a buddy of mine who just saw the movie, and he was like, "Oh my God, when you shot her, when you both shoot at each other, I could have killed her, but I didn't."
Right.
I just wounded her because I wanted to. And there's this beautiful scene where we crawl together and I hold her and I tell her, "I love you, Marie." And then she had to kill me because I killed her parents.
Yeah.
Not that I wanted to, but I had, So it was a very, 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 very strong emotional movie. And the actress was amazing. Nina Bergen mm-hmm. was amazing. Jesse did a great job. Louis Mandler was amazing in the movie. I mean, I think the one gift Jesse has, his greatest gift is the actors he picks. It's incredible. Every part was perfect. Every part was perfect cast. So that's one of his gifts, I think.
Well, and he's got a crew that continually works with him,
Same crew.
Yeah.
Same.
And so that obviously, I always think it speaks highly to a director when actors keep coming back and wanting to work with them again.
Yep. So, you always use the same people. Absolutely. And so now my question. So Leah, what are you doing next?
I got an email late last night, and so we'll talk. I mean, there's that project that we had lunch about just came back. You know how these things go, where it's in holding patterns and then the email. So yeah, I would love, I really, it's a perfect one for you to be involved in. So hopefully that comes together, and if not, you're always at the top.
Yeah, we just talked about, Chan is a really good friend of mine. So yesterday, him and I had a long talk, and we just spoke about you.
Well, I just read a little thing that he sent us for, we haven't announced that project yet, but it's fantastic. I'm super excited about that coming together. And I told you I talked to the moneymakers about you, and they were like, oh yeah, tell Daniel we don't know who he is. And I was like, oh, so you do know Daniel. That would be the most infuriating thing to tell him. Daniel, who's Daniel? And then
is so funny. I love those two girls. They just hired me recently.
Yeah.
They hired me for a little thing that I cannot talk about what it is, but it is so funny.
They are incredible. And they were talking to me, and you probably like the story, because they were like, you know, we're working with, when they're doing second unit for Hawkeye and they're working with all these guys and stunts, and they're kind of talking to them the way that they're used to coming up. And they said, these younger stunt guys get very sensitive. And then I looked at them and I said, well, if you guys yelled at me, I'd probably get a little messed in the head too. It's like, they're just so intimidatingly cool and gorgeous ladies that you're like, I don't want to be criticized. I'm going to go back to my trailer.
I tell you, Heidi and Renee, I mean, you're probably talking about the two most gifted stunt people, performers, fight coordinators, stunt coordinators. I mean, these ladies are unbelievable. I had the pleasure to work with them just recently on a movie that I cannot say what it is because we're not allowed to talk about that. And then they hired me for something else.
Wait a minute. I think I saw the behind the scenes footage of this other thing that you're in, and it's hilarious.
If you see it, I really can't say what it is.
No, you can't.
I can't. I'd be shocked. I'd be killed.
To annoying the podcast audience, we will link to this when it comes out.
So let's do that. Yeah, let's do that when it comes out. Let's talk about it. The story behind this is beyond. It's beyond. It's so, you will cry laughing when you see this. It's so funny. But Heidi, I just spoke to her a couple of days ago, and she's always somebody I want to work with, and I hit up and she hits me up, and I like her very, very much. We spent a lot of time together, Heidi and I, in 87-11 training together, I worked with her on Civil War, and we actually both got nominated for a stunt award. And it was also with your boy, who was in Civil War.
Grillo.
I met Grillo on Civil War, and he was actually a really cool guy. And he saw me and I saw him, we were like, hey, what's up?
Chad's looking at each other up. Yeah.
Yeah. But he was actually very cool with me. He was a really good guy.
That's great.
We totally hit it off, him and I.
Yeah, he always respects alphas. Like, he does, everyone else can get it, but I noticed, especially with the stunt guys, he's very respectful to the stunt guys. Because he knows the people that actually can fight instead of the ones that fake fight.
He's actually really good.
He's a good boxer, good hands.
He's a really good boxer.
Yeah.
Really, really good. I mean, he's somebody I actually really like. He's got a great look.
Yes. But I was going to say, back to Heidi, just a great sense of humor too, and a great sense of humor in her action, which is what I like. I'm so excited to, hopefully we get this other project that we're now teasing off the ground, because I think within a few years, she's going to be one of the biggest directors in town, without a doubt to me.
100%. And she's super talented and super good. So that movie I did with her, I mean, I watched her on set. And I told her after, I said, Heidi, I'm really impressed how you're handling the set. It's a huge movie. And she's the one doing everything. I was like, damn, that was really. And she was like, really? And I was like, yeah, I'm really impressed. I took a lot of notes.
And those delts, her delts, shredded delts, just moving them around like this. It's so impressive.
she is really special. Yeah. She really said, "We don't know Daniel." I'm gonna write this down.
And then immediately took out their phone and showed me the behind the scenes photos of you in costumes and stuff. So
you saw that?
Yeah, that's so, they followed it up. They didn't leave you hanging. But anyway, enough of me gossiping about the people that I get to hang out with, and holding you, Daniel, this was so great. I thank you again for coming on. We'd love to have you back whenever you, have a moment to talk to us about any of your upcoming projects, and, we'll keep in touch.
So we should make it a rule. when I have a cool project coming out, I got to come on. How about
exactly?
That? Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that. That I'm all in favor of, because
Liam always knows what I'm doing. How about this? I got when Extraction comes out, that'd be a good time. That's I think that's December. I think
yes. You have to come on for Extraction 2, because that is I'm actually really fucking pumped for that movie. Like I joke about the Rake Lives hashtag, but I'm really pumped for this movie.
He is something else, I'll tell you that. He's something else.
No, that's funny, because Atkin said that of all the new generation of guys that he thinks Hemsworth's like towards the top, and now you're kind of saying something similar.
He is something else, that guy. I mean, he's a stud. I got a little bit like, okay, I'm not worthy.
I've heard other people say that like in his presence, you're like, that's not quite a human. Like that's something slightly different.
And you know what? He's the nicest, the most important thing to me. I mean, he is like, I'm an artist. I'm a photographer. I want to direct. I look at him and I go, wow, that's somebody I would like to photograph. It's got an amazing look. He's fit. He's a great actor. But most important, he's actually a very cool guy.
Yeah.
Actually, sorry, Daniel, I didn't mean to.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Atkins has on an old episode, he's got, I don't know if you guys have heard it, but he's got a great story, because, you know, Atkins kills Liam in Liam Hemsworth in Expendables 2. And so they're on the premiere and Chris is there, and Scott tells the story that he yelled across the red carpet, "Oi, Chris, I killed your brother." And I guess all Hemsworth did is his like face lit up and he goes, "Good. He deserved it."
That is so funny. I met Liam too, and he's awesome as well. I met him in Prague.
Oh, excellent. Excellent.
Another stud. I was like, what is wrong with these guys?
I know. Like, I know. They're
Liam is actually big. Taller. Liam is taller. Liam is like 6'5".
Oh, yeah. Shit.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. Oh, yeah. I like the height. The height thing is very interesting. As saying, even watching Bloodsport and being like, it's you're towering over everybody in that movie. Whereas, you know, most leads were just used to them like standing on apple boxes to like look like they're the same size as everybody. It's just a fun dynamic to see you know, taller action actors. So
you know who's like that too? The Rock.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, that's right. So you had that little, was it Red Notice, where you came in with the highlight of the movie for us was, of course, your scene. How did that one little thing come about?
I just got a call. I literally got a call like 3 days before. My buddy, Jackson Spidell, who's, I don't know if you know that guy. You should have him on the show, by the way.
Okay.
He is probably Jackson Spidell. One of the most gifted human beings you've ever met in your life. You want to talk about fit? You want to talk about talented? He doubled Keanu for years on John Wick. Incredible athlete and one of the 87 guys. He was the fight coordinator. So he calls me up and he goes, "Hey, listen, are you available?" I said, "Sure." I think they lost somebody. They had somebody else and they lost him. And I was kind of like the substitute, and which is fine. Nothing wrong with that. Met the director. He was awesome. I had to audition, actually. I had to do a little auditioning scene and came out, met. That was really funny. That's actually, if you don't mind, that's actually a good story. I have good stories. So I'm on set and it took about 4 hours to put all the tattoos on, a lot of makeup. So I never got a chance to rehearse or meet the actors, Ryan Reynolds and The Rock. So I come to set. So they're already rehearsing the scene. There's a little like a little acting before. So the first time I meet The Rock was actually shooting. So, but me as a performer, I'm like, I'm in character.
Yeah.
I walk in and I look at him and I'm just going like, I'm gonna fuck you up. I remember I came in and he says, you know, there's the lines, and then I say, you're a cop, you're dead. And I look at his food and I push his food very slowly towards him and I dump the food, and it was real.
Yeah.
His food plate, I dump it in his lap and he's just like, and he looks at me And I'm just like, I'm going to fuck you up. As a character, not intimidated that it's The Rock. I'm playing, you know, I'm in character. And then we get up and we have our scene. And then he comes up to me and go, oh, man, that was awesome. You know, that was really cool. And then he gave me a really, really nice compliment. He's actually, you know, again, very cool guy. So we started to talk a little bit about martial arts and movies. And so he comes up to me and I do this. I have to do a spinning hook kick and knock him out. And then I have to do a punch to his. No, I'm sorry. He punches me. He punches me in the face and I react. And the photographer captured the picture from profile, him punching me and me just going like, wow. And he comes up to me, Daniel, look, look, look. This looks amazing. You look at the reaction you're taking. Look how good like I look punching you. And he loved that picture. And the picture actually made the press. Oh. I have it on my Instagram. Very, very cool guy. Hope I can work with him again sometime soon. He's something else, that guy. Massive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can't wait to see his movie, Black Adam. That guy is, I mean, he is. I mean, I'm like a little, like nothing next to him. He's so thick. Respect to that man.
Amazing.
So Liam, you and I both have to do a lot of.
Yeah, I'll meet you at 87-Eleven. Let's do some supersets. Well, Mike, any final thoughts? Or
I think we've hijacked Daniel long enough. Yes. Let's let him go. But Daniel, where can, if people want to follow you on social media, where can they find you?
I do Instagram. I'm not the best at it, but I have a little thing on Instagram. It's The Real Daniel Bernhardt.
And I will make sure to link that in the show notes as well so that people can follow you there.
Just want to add that he's not on Twitter. And so there was a fake Daniel Bernhardt impersonator on Twitter recently that was like DMing people and stuff. So
really?
That's not you. God. Yeah, I blew them up.
We got it shut down because Liam blew it up. But I loved your response, Liam, because he DM'd Liam and Liam's like, you know, I'm actually friends with Daniel and I know you're not him. So, Daniel, thank you. We're going to do a couple quick reviews. So we'll let you tag out and we're going to wrap up here, but thank you so much. We will absolutely, if you're willing, get you back on the show again, as much and as often as you want to be here.
As listen, Liam and I are buddies. I love him. I love to work with him again. So I'm joking. I'm kidding. The hustle never stops.
I love it.
I love it.
We're going to make it happen.
It was my pleasure being here. Thank you for your time and all the best.
All right. Have a good Sunday.
Thank you. Yeah, bye-bye. Thank you.
We did it.
We did it, boys. Boy, you know, I got to tell you, I rarely get starstruck. As soon as he logged on, I was like, oh, fuck, that's Daniel Bernhardt. Like, and for people listening, I mean, I'll post some video clips and some pictures. He is exactly as hot in real life as you think he's going to be. Like, the motherfucker just glowed. I was like, oh, shit. I'm not going to be able to hold it together for this episode. All right, boys, we got to do this quick because Liam, you got a heart out.
Yes.
So two quick reviews. I guess we should say, first of all, we can give our quick thoughts on Lou and then we'll talk about Section 8. So Liam, I think you probably liked Lou the best out of the three of us, although I don't actually know Vice's thoughts, but give us your thoughts on Lou.
Yeah. I mean, I liked Lou quite a bit. I like that, you know, it's an interesting kind of take on an action movie. It's a bad robot production. So right away, it's got a pretty decent budget for the size, you know, contrasting it to some of the, you know, other DTV movies we see that have similar premises and similar sort of contained, you know, on one sort of island location or house sort of thing. It's nice to see something that like could afford rain towers. You know what I mean? Like, it's just the little things that we took for granted in 90s thrillers that you're like, wow, they're doing a whole thing.
it had to be miserable to film. I mean, everything is so wet. And that was one thing that I thought was really impressive, was just it looked miserable. Everybody
is miserable. We did AVP2 had extensive rain tower scenes, and it's fucking miserable. And like, people do not want to be under those because there's no way to heat the water. It's so it's just cold water dropping on you in the middle of cold air. So yeah, it's a bad experience, but it looks great on screen, and it totally fit the sort of survival story that they have going on. Absolutely. You know, I don't even know if it's something I'll leave it to you guys to kind of dissect more of the story. I was kind of just looking at it more from the director production angles of I think the director who and the DP is actually a pretty accomplished DP in his own right, who's done a bunch of dramas as well. But I just felt like her eye was very precise. Like, there's one shot that stood out to me. And these are the little things that get me excited sometimes, where Lou faces off with the bad guy. He goes to check on her gun. He says, drop your guns. And then he goes to check on her gun. And it does this kind of like over to him checking the gun that then tilts down into seeing her pull the knife out of her pants, and then tilts back up to seeing him turn around. And that's like a really weird shot that you would normally just cut down to the knife coming out, but to kind of get like three pieces of story within an insert is always like tasty to me. That's like Chris Probst, the DP of Beyond Skyline, would call that mesics. Like, you're getting three mise-en-scenes within one shot. He's like, oh, that's a three mesics shot. And so it doesn't necessarily make sense, but it's the things that excite me, because you know, you kind of have to have a really precise eye. So that's when I dug into the director's filmography and saw how she had come up, and it made me really appreciate that. I just like seeing people. You know, I still believe in the myth of meritocracy, and I like seeing people, you know, work their way up to bigger and better things, and have a long, sustainable career. And I will be honest, I was really checking. There's a finale on a location that, well, I'll just kind of say it. There's a lighthouse location, and it's not really a spoiler that something's on a lighthouse. I love lighthouses. I grew up on the East Coast. I've been trying to do a movie with a lighthouse for a while, so I have like a particular fetish for lighthouses, and I think they're just something like beautiful and mythic about them. And they're on the top of it, and I couldn't tell if it was comps or if it was a real location. Some of it looked real. Some I could have maybe guessed as comps, but it did not fall into, let's say, the Netflix or even just recent movie bad CG finale that I was kind of like holding my eyes like, please, this thing has looked kind of immaculate the whole way through. Please don't become, you know, something that that visually falls off the map. And it never did. It really, to me, maintained very high production values, very high cinematography, even the end fight in the location. There's some really striking compositions with it. So yeah, to me, I was kind of more drawn to the visuals of this one than anything else. I mean, I think you could definitely say the story is a little overlong and familiar, but the performances are great. The action's great, and the compositions and that were really the strength for me. So yeah, it was just nice to see a movie that looked like a real movie.
As I joked on Twitter, you're such a director watcher, man. Yep, Liam's always gonna default to the directors. No, I think
that's the part that I'm trying to get better at. You know, it's the part that I'm focusing on more at this point in my life. Whereas when I was younger, I was a total script watcher. That's why I make fun of them, because it's like, that's me at 22. You know, I was just like, oh god, the story, the logic. Ugh. And I still everyone does that from now and then, but I'm really trying to be like, if I got this script, how would I make it stand out? And that's sort of the way I try to watch things now, rather than how would I rewrite it, if that makes sense.
Sure. No, it does. Vice, your thoughts on Lou?
I really enjoyed this. It felt like a Halle Berry movie to the next level. Because Halle Berry kind of makes these, like, she makes these strange, like, thrillers. Like, it's kind of a meme, a joke in Black Twitter. Like, because somebody's in various movies, somebody's taking her kid, and like, he has adventures to get him back. So like it's like one of those kinds of things, but like now they have Journey Smollett doing the Halle Berry role, and so she does it pretty well. So it's almost like they split Halle Berry saving the kid in two characters. You have Journey Smollett, and then you have this grizzled badass Allison Janney, which even saying it on his face is weird, but then she actually performs it. Like, it's like, holy shit. Like, this bitch is bad. Like, it's amazing to see, like, not that I doubted it, but like, because, well, Allison Janney, we all know, is a great actress, of course, and like, we all know she can do like this, that tiger, that fierce at presence well, but usually it's like in a context of like a dramatic or sardonic way. But to see her actually apply that to an actual action role, and like, so like her verbal barbs are just as powerful as her actual stabbing barbs. It's like, holy shit, it totally makes sense. Like, of course this would work. Like, well, how could I ever doubt this in the first place? And like I say, like our esteemed guest Daniel just said, just be fucking tall. Like, this is like, this is a big bad bitch. Like, just a classic, you know, like you just don't bitch.
I was gonna say, you know, just what you were saying there, but her lack of vanity, I think, sells it more, because she didn't dye her hair. You know, she's got she went full gray, and she doesn't wear a lot of makeup, so it's like even more. She looks older than she is in the movie. So, and most actors don't ever want to look older than they are. So that she, you know, her lack of vanity actually helps sell the character and the action.
Yeah. So as far as the actual story goes and like the setup or what it is, like, I know Mike, you mentioned like you guys are talking about like the lighting and stuff. I did have some problems with like seeing some of the stuff, I do think that it looks good overall, but you know, it being like in a dark forest or parts of it, dark forest area, an issue at times that some things are too dimly lit, but you know, it's what it is. But then story wise though, it did take me a little while to get on board with it. No, it was not slow, but it's, it seems both at once stock standard, but also like, you're not sure where it's going with this. Yeah. But then there's a pretty central big twist. And I was like, holy shit, I actually like this twist. I say the twist is to give you too much. It's like, I like this plot turn or that, you know, comes all full circle. I like where this is going, you know, and how it fits the character and like what they're doing. You don't see this particular element play out often. Honestly, it's kind of, I've only seen this in like, you know, Metal Gear Solid games. It's like, it's that kind of strange, like this is like covert. This is like a black, what I call the black coffee tactical suspense kind of movie with a covert tint to it. And, you know, and then there's a lot of military background stuff as well. You know what? It reminds me of last year we had Those Who Wish Me Dead with Angelina Jolie. Remember that? And the kid, they had the two guy hitman come after. It's actually very similar in like in theme to that, the Lewis to that movie. Whereas I think that one is a little more, is crisper in its flow. This one kind of embraces the suck a little more. It's more languid, but there's still plenty of sharp action when it does get to the action parts. So yeah, I enjoyed that. You know, like the weird subtext to it. I enjoyed Lou just the same way. Like this weird back elements. And well, it's not a spoiler. The actual setting, even though it takes place in the past, is still just as relevant. You know, now what's happening within this world that we discover who she is. So yeah, I thought it was
Let's have Mike do his thoughts and then let's do like a quick spoiler talk, because I kind of want to hear like the spoiler version of what you're trying to say.
Okay.
I'm definitely on the low end of this one, between the two of you. This one, I really, really wanted to like this one. It was a bit of a miss for me, which I feel bad. Daniel, if you're actually listening back to this episode, I apologize. But I do think, first of all, I do want to give a lot of credit to the fight scenes. I think the action in it, what action there is pretty terrific. And like I said, that Shaq fight between Janney and Daniel is fucking terrific. That's going to probably go on like my 10 best fights of the year list. I thought that was pretty incredible. And Allison Janney does the work. I mean, there's no question. She's doing the work. She's doing the Bob Odenkirk thing. And I really, really enjoyed her performance and her character in this. I thought she was just never not riveting at any time she was on screen. In fact, part of the problem is the times she's not on screen for me, because I absolutely love Journey Smollett, and Logan Marshall Green is one of my favorite actors, especially after The Invitation and Upgrade. And I feel like I wish they got more than one note to play. You know, Green is basically in one note crazy psycho mode. And Journey Smollett is basically in one note worried mother mode until sort of kind of the end of the movie and stuff comes together. But I think there's a lot of good things in it. I think it could have used a little bit more of an exploitation edge rather than the serious, serious drama edge. It kind of needed, I mean, Anna Forrester clearly has skills. She's a very talented director, but this is something to me that kind of maybe might have been better if it had been directed by somebody like Pierre Morel, just steer into that exploitation edge a little bit more. But I think there's a lot to recommend. I certainly didn't hate the movie. And I certainly, that's not my criticism. It is. And I do agree, Liam, with what you said that, I mean, it looks like an actual fucking movie. Like it doesn't look like a streaming movie.
Yeah. You can't say it's a Netflix movie. It's not. And I do feel like timing is interesting because this was one of the busiest weekends for streaming new release series, fucking sports. It's just been an onslaught. I feel like if this had come out around the time of The Old Guard, we'd be getting Lou 2, right now.
And it's even weird for Netflix because they also dropped Athena this weekend, which is, an incredibly highly reviewed sort of action drama thriller. And so it's like those both Lou and Athena kind of hit the same target audience. Why would you drop them both on the same service on the same weekend? That's weird to me. Again, Netflix, give us money. We're not judging you. We're happy to sell out,
We don't even have to sell out because two-thirds of the pod loved Lou. Put it on the poster. Yeah. Lou right. 2.
So we will now for Lou go into a quick spoiler section. So spoilers in 3, 2, 1. You can jump forward in about 5 minutes or so if you don't want to hear the spoilers. So Vice, what were you going to say?
So it's a kind of interesting manifestation of like the sins of our global intervention, quote unquote. The CIA basically fucking up other countries, and it's kind of and so. Well, here's so the big reveal is that the husband who's like a violent he said that he's a ranger, so he has like these tactical skills, but we find out that he's actually Lou's son, and part of this what makes him a monster, at least it's implied that he was actually kidnapped / assaulted during her time in Iran, doing her covert operations as an agent. And she had to basically forego his safety to keep her cover. He eventually got rescued, but that she had to basically sacrifice her son for national security, quote unquote. And it's they don't really show too much about it, but just it kind of, even saying it now, it's disgusting. You feel like, holy, it's fucked up that we don't see this kind of thing often. Well, there's plenty of COVID team goes out and they get the family. As we'll talk about next, movie, a guy, a special agent guy, his family's murdered. Nothing was to revenge, this is without remorse. But to see this kind of twist on that kind of how the family is affected, but also how our sacrifice to this greater thing has these second, third order effects that, and then so in this case, so somehow, some way, despite that trauma, maybe because of it, he grew to become a special forces soldier. But then in that time, he fermented cruelty upon the world that was done unto him. But not just that in the grander international sense, but also on his own very family, the wife. And so it's actually the movie doesn't go to the serious hard drama route. It's not Prisoners or whatever. It doesn't get to that. It doesn't make you wallow in that misery too much because it's still I do the acting for you. But just that very premise is this is pretty powerful stuff. That's similar to remember we did the Interceptor, the stupid ass missile movie. But the fact that she was a sexual assault survivor that was really offended to that experience. This is really surprising, heady stuff for this otherwise kind of simple action burner. So that's what really got to me about it is that because again we hadn't seen anything quite like that. I mean, there was A Long Kiss Goodnight kind of plays with that, but it's more of a higher, not higher fantasy, but higher minded or flight of fantasy kind of spy movie. But this is like down and dirty. This is like down and dirty dealing with the sins, with personal emotional sin of this service and how it affects the world we live. And that's something that she says aloud in the part of her dialogue, is that how leaving the world worse or better than you left it. So yeah, I was really surprised to kind of like go into that depth for this pretty standard action joint, but action thriller. But yeah, that's why I really appreciate it. So yeah,
I mean, it for me, it's like the movie doesn't work really without this twist, because you're watching it and you're like, wait a minute. So they're in the middle of fucking nowhere, and her neighbor is a former CIA agent, and then her husband comes to get her, and he's also like a special forces badass. Like, what the fuck is like that? That was throwing me at the beginning. Like, this is a real small world. And then I feel kind of stupid that I didn't immediately put it together. I was like, oh, of course there should be some relationship. And you should note that it's a period piece. It's actually set in, you know, the 80s, around the time, or is it the 90s, around the time of the fall of the you know, of the wall in East Germany, because, you know, they're dealing with the fallout of Lou's intervention in Iran, you know, the previous decade and all that stuff, the 70s. So yeah, but the period piece does, of course, help with not having cell phones and all that stuff. You can just focus on the nitty gritty survival story. But I like you, Vice. I was actually so curious about what your takeaway was, because it's even just the fact that he has to, you know, just making an actor like want to kill his mother, and they like they get really intense in the scenes, that it does conjure some different emotions. So I found that angle quite interesting, and it's a little bit the weird movie that reminded me of a little bit. It's not related at all, but it's like I Saw the Devil, where it's like that you've got these guy who's fucking with this serial killer, and then they like crash into a farm and there's another serial killer there. And you're like, wait, how many serial killers are in this universe? So yeah, that was kind of where I was at the beginning. And then, it all kind of worked for me. And then they just did the Lou Lives ending, you know, that, she washes away into the water. This is going to be a new Netflix trope, is that you kill your hero, they wash away into the water, and then you just see a kind of a shot of them from an over. And now we can get Lou 2 going, Lou Lives, #
You know, I read some reviews that really didn't like the plot turn. They call it ridiculous. I'm actually with you guys. I think the movie completely fails if it doesn't have that twist. I mean, I think that twist is essential to the narrative of the story. It's the only way the movie works. So it didn't bother me, you know, even though I have criticisms of the movie, that didn't bother me in the slightest. And I thought, you know, there was some nice character work that arises out of it. I particularly liked Allison Janney when she's like, not everybody is meant to be a mother. I thought that was a tough line. And she delivered it incredibly well. So, but anyway, yeah. So I would say, you know, I'm going to go ahead and say 3 out of 3 of us recommend it. My recommendation is just much lower, but I think there's enough good in it, and I think just Janney alone is worth the hour and 47 minutes or however long it is that it takes to watch the movie. I still think it's a little flat. It didn't hit for me, but it's certainly not, you know, it's certainly not one of the worst movies I've seen this year by any means. So I think, you know, I think it's fair to say 3 out of 3 recommends for us on this one.
Yeah. It's like, it contrasts with Section 8, is that you're like, it would be great to see films like Section 8 getting the budget and the kind of the you know, the support that a movie like Lou is. So it's like, it's great to see like that they're still doing that. And I love our DTV world, but I still want everybody to get more to play with. And so I'm always cheering on when I see like, oh, they had time and they had resources to make this movie. This is fantastic. But Section 8, really does make the most of whatever its reported budget is. It's a very, very ambitious, fun movie that is kind of like it's Chad Laws without remorse, as Vice said. I remember watching the trailer. We talked about it on here, but I kind of didn't, get any of the plot points really stuck in my head, and I didn't reread anything before I watched it. So when I was settling in and watching the first 20 minutes, I kind of thought we were setting up for Ryan Kwanten and Mickey Rourke kind of taking on the bad guys in the neighborhood kind of movie. I did not realize that we were going to go into full on, Tom Clancy territory. So that was, again, they're like, oh shit, this is way darker than what I was expecting. And then it keeps kind of going on into different directions and has I think what Mikey said is several action movies put together. It's an action ass looking action movie. I'll let you guys expand.
Yeah, Vice, go ahead.
Oh yeah, so it definitely as a action movie looking ass action movie, that was damn sure. Like you said, like they had Chad knows I'm not joking about this shit, because airsoft guns and old fake military surplus vest to go to be like this top elite team. So it's charming what they're trying to do. So he knows I'm not fucking supposed to. That's part of the fun of all this stuff. Like I used to watch it like this every Friday night at 8 on Cinemax. Like this is that kind of same fucking movie. And blah blah. We're just gonna lock and load a quick X movie. Have a blast with it and go your way. It's doing that perfectly. You said the ambition, it's actually trying to using its tools that it has to make it proposal, make the scale feel larger. Plenty of overhead establishing shots. It goes to Reno, Nevada. It goes to Afghanistan. It goes to Colorado. It's doing this, even though they're probably not a lot.
Vice, you must have laughed your ass off at the New York segment.
Oh,
cut to a stock footage thing of an underground thing in New York, and then it's just like a lobby in L.A.
Yeah. I saw that they have shots of the subway station, 14th Street, stations I've been to intimately, the Penn Station, and I'm like, y'all motherfuckers ain't there.
Even the faucet that he's washed his face on, I'm like, that's way too clean and nice to be a fucking New York subway faucet.
You know, palm trees up in Times Square, motherfucker, get out of here. But you know, it was like the try. I like that they keeping the actual, because part of it is a on the run movie. Well, part of it becomes an on the run movie kind of way. Then you have the actual nemesis enforcer assassin, the mighty Scott Atkins coming in, he's this ominous presence while all this black opposite is going on. He's like, oh, I'm also he's Hitman. He's a Hitman movie.
He's basically a fucking Terminator in this movie.
Yeah. He shows up, he's like, shoot that kid. He's like, yo, this book is wild, man. You don't give a fuck. The movie has gusto to make this, to sell this stuff. Even if it has the minimal budget or the minimal time or resources, they're just going for it. They do it, and they have enough of the crew, the actors. I mean, Dermot Mulroney, they have enough people there to make it run, make it smooth. Saying all that, it's still a DTV action movie, it's still an acquired taste even now, you know. So it's not an episode of Barry, you know.
It's not an episode of Barry. No, it's not. What you were saying about Scott, being the Terminator, and that you see a bit of what Chad was talking about on the show, like his 90s mean streak. Like he's got that Tarantino sort of this dude's just going to fucking start shooting anybody in his way. Because in a couple of different scripts, there'll be a character that's just a total psychopath like that.
Yeah.
And is just mowing down local cops and casino workers, without any hesitation.
But it's just the attitude. There's a part where he after the shootout, he's calling the main bad guy, and the main guy's like, you failed. And he goes, hold on, who the fuck you think you're talking to? I was like, yo, I felt that shit. He was like, he was in the zone with that movie. He was like, yeah, I want, we definitely need more bad guys acting, because he's feeling that shit. He can kind of tell you, he likes being a bad guy like that.
Yeah, no, that's what I love about Scott is that, you know, some of these guys would be like, no, I have to be the star no matter what. But he's like Daniel. They're kind of like, well, you know, they're happy to play and do different things. And it is just, you know, he comes in and at 45 minute mark and you're like, oh, fucking finally, this is like, the movie does get like a total, you know, burst of juice. And then even the spoiler, the finale is you kind of think the movie's over and then you're like, oh, wow, we got a whole other Atkins fight here. This is fantastic.
Yeah. And again, it's like, you know, it's a pretty big, I want to just kind of make sure I establish how, like, what to expect people, like, you know, because it's really big, like pretty significant climax, breaking out of a top secure facility. It's like in a fucking, like, I don't know. It's like in a bank basement. It's like this is what they have to work with. What they use, they're doing it well. So just like, you know, just if you accept that on his terms, you're gonna have a good time with this.
I was DMing with that part about Brandon last night. I was like, it's in like a Chinese restaurant, and then the next scene is on a helipad with the real working helicopter, which is not.
Yeah.
So it is like a tale of two movies, and you know they're just making they're using as much resources as they have. But we haven't heard from, I think, the biggest fan of the movie on the podcast. So let's hear Mike.
Yeah, I loved this one. I everything you guys say is true. It is absolutely DTV. It is absolutely incredibly low budget. It was shot in Palm Springs. Like, you know, it is not, they are not working with Lou money here. But I think that Chad is he is particularly gifted with this kind of script. And I do want to give, I need to look it up really quick. I need to give credit because this isn't just Chad. This is he had a co-writer on this one, Josh. I think it's Josh Ridgway. Josh Ridgway. You know, they're incredibly gifted. And I think one of the things I particularly liked is in Quentin and Dermot Mulroney, they have actors who are perfectly gifted to deliver Chad's kind of hard boiled 90s tough guy dialogue. You know, they really do kind of tear into it and deliver it. You know, I was watching it. I was enjoying it. You guys all know I'm a big Ryan Quentin fan. So I was happy to see him. I think he does a terrific job in this. Was very surprised that I've watched it twice now. Was very surprised that, you know, the first act is what most movies would make an entire movie. And it's literally just the first act of this one. And like you said, Liam, surprised at how dark it was when, you know, he's talking to Dolph in the prison and he's basically saying, I don't regret anything. I don't regret it for a second. Like, all right, there's some nice there. Again, there's that Chad Law edge that you're expecting. But boy, folks listening, I got to tell you, it's literally the 45 minute mark. Just fucking Scott showing up in this movie is just so goddamn, like, I was fist pumping as soon as he showed up. Christian Sesma hooks him up. I was actually talking to Brandon about this too, and other friend of the show, Matt Esri, that it's nice to see that people are now, I think, starting to figure out, if you've only got Scott Adkins for three scenes, make those three fucking scenes count. Make those three scenes the best scenes in your movie. Because that's basically what he's got. He's got three action scenes in this, and that's it. His total screen time is maybe 15 minutes tops. He will be what you remember from this movie. You will walk away from this movie, and Scott will be what you remember. And I was DMing you guys talking about, you know, and this isn't really a spoiler. You know, obviously, he and Quentin have the last fight in the movie. And I loved that they did not even attempt to make it look like Ryan Quentin could beat Scott Adkins straight up. I mean, 90% of that fight is Adkins just kicking the shit out of Quentin.
With a lot of like old school Adkins kicks too. Yeah. It's not just a brawler fight like he's been doing more recently.
Yeah, no. It's a terrific, it is definitely one of my favorite fights of the year. I think it's terrific. I really liked this one. It's on AMC Plus. So if you've got, you know, you can either get a free trial or subscribe to that and watch it, or you can buy it. I bought it on Vudu because I buy every Scott movie because I have a problem. But And I support my friends. It's the same reason I own Skylines like three different.
Sorry, I just want to. There's one important thing I have to say. I can't let it go. It's actually pretty significant. This is a matter of like fact checking or just editorial oversight. In the beginning of the film, section 8, there's a. This is not an insult to anybody. It's just important that we all kind of. These small things can have big consequences. It's a flashback to his battle. He's the main character, Navy SEAL, so it's a flashback to his comic combat. But they kind of they confuse the areas, and I don't know if it's purposeful or not, but it's important. Like they say, it's Mosul, Afghanistan. Mosul is not in Afghanistan. That is Iraq. Iraq and Afghanistan are two distinct conflicts, and you know, this is like, you know, this movie is not trying to make a specific, well, I, you know what? No, I should say that. Because there is kind of like some pretty significant subtextual political stuff here. You know, it's a black ops operation that you have to like hear of. But this is just, it's really, I, no matter the budget or the time or the, you know, the resources available, there's just some stuff you got to get right. You just got to like make that effort or get that double check and stuff, you know. Like that's actually, because I mean, straight up, like if some of the guys, you know, like Chris or whatever, like, who are veterans watching for this stuff, that's gonna turn you off. That's gonna put a bad taste in your mouth from the very first frame. So like, I think it's important that, you know, any filmmaker, any producer, writer, just like if you're trying to set things in a relative real world setting or even wherever you are, just like, you know, just make sure that you can kind of be cohesive and. You know, check your work, cross your T's, dot your I's, and so forth. Because that's especially because there's a great fucking movie called Mosul on Netflix. It's like one of the best horror films of the past few years, and that's a very specific kind of specific important conflict that needed its own attention. So you got to make sure you take that time and care to not conflate these things. So yeah, that's a quick add more about that. So.
There was another movie this year that did the same thing. I think it was either Interceptor or Blacksite that fucked up that too. So it's definitely a thing that's happening on these low budget movies. But I don't know.
And even big stuff. Like I remember like years ago when the first Call of Duty, well, the newer ones, or one of the Call of Duty games, like they were like, they have things where they sit these things in Iraq. So they have like supposedly Arabic graffiti on the walls, but it was just gibberish. Like, you know, so even with big stuff like this, there's a lot of care. Things need to have that care taken if you're going to involve them in the story in the first place, you know.
Well, I don't want to react like that is running me off the pod, but I am I'm 4 minutes out of my
oh, yeah, yeah.
And I gotta go coach my daughter, so I'm gonna I'll wish you guys, if you guys want to wrap anything up, but I'm gonna say
we're good. So
okay, follow Liam Odin on Twitter and Instagram, and thank you, boys. Love you. And this was a fantastic one. I'm so happy that we got to have Daniel on. And by the way, he is the one who told me, I didn't have a background in martial arts. I did it this way. But, it, you know, that's fine. He told me that story three or four years ago. He changed the story this time. It's okay. It all worked out. I'm glad that we had such a great a podcast. And I'm looking forward to next week and hearing all your thoughts on all these crazy streaming series that have all come out and everything. But I will sign off now and talk to you guys later.
Vice, where can people find you?
Instagram looking hot, Letterboxd being smart, and Twitter talking shit.
Yep, you can find me on Twitter at Hibachi Justice. You can find the show on Twitter at A4E Podcast. That's the letter A, the number four, the letter E Podcast. And you are listening to us, so you know you can find us anywhere podcasts are found. Vice, buddy, love you. Have a good Sunday. Let's do this.
One for the books, baby. Oh, man. It was great.
Yep, this was a good one today. So, all right, man. We'll talk soon.
All right. Take care, guys. Cheers.